ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text 23. Asmat prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha.
Asmat prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha.
Ikshvaku vansha avatirya gurur nideshe. Tishthanvanang sadayatanuja avivesha.
Tishthanvanang sadayatanuja avivesha.
Yasmin virudhya dashakandhara artimarchat.
Yasmin virudhya dashakandhara artimarchat.
Asmat prasada sumukha kalaya kalesha.
Asmat
Ikshvaku vansha avatirya gurur nideshe.
Ikshvaku vansha avatirya gurur nideshe.
Tishthanvanang sadayatanuja avivesha.
Tishthanvanang sadayatanuja avivesha.
Yasmin virudhya dashakandhara artimarchat.
Appeared in the family of Maharaj Ikshvaku as the lord of his internal potency, Sita. Under the order of his father, Maharaj Dasharatha, he entered the forest and lived there for considerable years with his wife and younger brother. Ravana, who was very materially powerful with 10 heads on his shoulders, committed a great offense against him and was thus ultimately vanquished. Purport. Lord Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his brothers, namely Bharat, Lakshmana, Shatrughna, are his plenary expansions. All four brothers are Vishnu Tattva and were never ordinary human beings. There are many unscrupulous and ignorant commentators on Ramayana who present the younger brothers of Lord Ramachandra as ordinary living entities. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the most authentic scripture on the science of Godhead, it is clearly stated that his brothers were his plenary expansions. Originally, Lord Ramachandra is the incarnation of Vasudev. Lakshmana is the incarnation of Shankarshan. Bharat is the incarnation of Pradyumna. And Shatrughna is the incarnation of Aniruddha. Expansions of the personality of Godhead. Lakshmi Devi Sita is the internal potency of the Lord and is neither an ordinary woman nor the external potency incarnation of Durga. Durga is the external potency of the Lord and she is associated with Lord Shiva. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 7, the Lord appears when there are discrepancies in the discharge of factual religion. Lord Ramachandra also appeared under the same circumstances, accompanied by his brothers, who are expansions of the Lord's internal potency, and by Lakshmiji, Sita Devi. Lord Ramachandra was ordered by his father, Maharaj Dasharatha, to leave home for the forest under awkward circumstances, and the Lord, as the ideal son of his father, carried out the order, even on the occasion of his being declared the king of Ayodhya. One of his younger brothers, Lakshmanaji, desired to go with him, and so also his eternal wife, Sitaji, desired to go with him. The Lord agreed to both of them, and altogether they entered the Dandakaranya forest to live there for 14 years. During their stay in the forest, there was some quarrel between Ramachandra and Ravana, and the latter kidnapped the Lord's wife Sita. The quarrel ended in the vanquishing of the greatly powerful Ravana, along with all his kingdom and family. Sita is Lakshmiji, or the goddess of fortune, but she is never to be enjoyed by any living being. She is meant for being worshipped by the living being, along with her husband, Sri Ramachandra. A materialistic man, like Ravana, does not understand this great truth, but on the contrary, he wants to snatch Sita Devi from the custody of Rama, and thus incurs great miseries. The materialists, who are after opulence and material prosperity, may take lessons from the Ramayana, that the policy of exploiting the nature of the Lord without acknowledging the supremacy of the Supreme Lord is the policy of Ravana. Ravana was very advanced materially, so much so that he turned his kingdom, Lanka, into pure gold or full material wealth. But because he did not recognize the supremacy of Lord Ramachandra and defied him by stealing his wife, Sita, Ravana was killed and all his opulence and power were destroyed. Lord Ramachandra is a full incarnation with six opulences in full, and he is therefore mentioned in this verse as Kaleshaha, or master of all opulence.
I'll read some extracts from this edition of Ramayana, and then afterwards I'll speak. I'm going to start in the introduction, which is penned by myself. Yeah, you can please start reading the beginning of the introduction, and then we'll skip over some to the birth, like this. Yeah. So please read. You got that? You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Starting on page 6 in Roman numerals.
Introduction. Lord Ramachandra is not a mythical figure, and not an ordinary person, or even a very great human being. He is the supreme personality of Godhead, the source, maintainer, and controller of unaccountable universes.
Uncountable.
Uncountable universes.
There is a difference.
Both spiritual and mundane. As the super soul, he is present in every atom and in the heart of every living being. He knows everything, past, present, and future. Lord Ramachandra is fully replete with six opulences, namely strength, fame, wealth, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation. He is the reservoir of all auspicious qualities and is the ultimate goal of life for the yogis, renunciates, and especially the devotees, whoever delight in glorifying his inconceivable pastimes. Being an expansion of Krishna, the original form of the personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra eternally resides in his own planet in the spiritual world. He is accompanied there by his expansions and associates, headed by his consort Sita, his brothers Lakshmana, Bharat, Shatrughna, and his celebrated servant Hanuman. Out of extraordinary compassion for the suffering conditioned souls, the Lord occasionally descends into this material world and is thus known as an avatar, literally one who descends. The Lord explains this in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 4 verse 7 and 8. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam sajamyaham paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya cha dushkritam dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion. I myself appear millennium after millennium. When the Supreme Lord comes to this world, he does so out of his own sweet will. Unlike the conditioned souls, he is not forced to take a body according to previous karma. Being far above the laws of karma, I Lord descends in his eternal Satchidananda form. His eyes are large, he is majestically medium tall in stature, and all his limbs are well formed and symmetrical. His bodily complexion is dark greenish blue and has a great luster. His intelligence is unfathomable. His manner is grave, and his speech is superb in tone and eloquence. Lord Ram has a supremely pure character and is a follower of true religious principles. He is full in self-realization and is the upholder of Varnashram Dharma. Truly he is the support of the entire universe. He is simultaneously the destroyer of all foes and the only shelter for those who are fully surrendered. Lord Ram is the absolute knower of the Vedas. Furthermore, he is fully conversant with the use of all weapons. He possesses unflinching determination and is a genius with unfailing memory. Indeed, his learning is without bounds. He is wise, compassionate, and heroic in battle. He is loved by all creatures and is impartial toward friends and foes alike. He is great like an ocean. In fortitude, he is like the Himalayan mountains. In strength, he is like Lord Vishnu. In beauty, he is like the moon. In forbearance, he is like the earth. And in anger, he is like the fire that blazes forth at the time of universal destruction. In wealth, he is like Kubera. And in devotion, he is like Dharma, the Lord of Righteousness. Narada then briefly described to Valmiki the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra. He concluded by telling him that this same Lord Rama now rules over his subjects in a most righteous and exemplary manner. He explained that during the reign of Lord Ram, no one would suffer from any disease or mental disturbance. Everyone within Lord Rama's kingdom would be happy and prosperous, never fearing thieves, scarcity or hunger. All the cities and villages would be filled with abundant grains, fruits, vegetables and milk products. Indeed, the people would experience the same degree of piety and happiness that was exhibited during the Satya Yuga. There would be no natural disturbances like floods, earthquakes or famine, and all the women would be chaste and never suffer widowhood. Lord Ramachandra will rule over the earth in this way for 11,000 years before returning to his supreme abode in the spiritual sky, Vaikuntha.
Okay, then to page 9. So, page 9 near the bottom, Maharaj Dasharath was the emperor.
Maharaj Dasharath was the emperor of the entire world and was a great Rajarshi, considered almost on the level of a Maharshi. He was a formidable warrior, capable of fighting alone with an unlimited number of opponents. Because he and the citizens were completely pious, Ayodhya was the picture of perfect Vedic civilization. Every imaginable opulence was exhibited in perfection, and the material miseries coming from the results of sinful life were practically non-existent. In Ayodhya, the four social orders, namely Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras, participated cooperatively for the peace and prosperity of the kingdom. No one cheated and no one was miserly. Arrogance, atheism, and harsh behavior and speech were conspicuous by their absence. Even though Maharaj Dasharath possessed such fantastic opulence and prestige, he remained unhappy. Try as he may, the king was unable to beget a son to continue his dynasty. Finally, after much deliberation, King Dasharath decided to perform a horse sacrifice for the purpose of getting a son. With this in mind, he sent his chief minister, Sumantra, to call for his family priests. When the Brahmanas headed by Vashishtha and Vamadeva assembled, Maharaj Dasharath addressed them, saying, "O best among the twice born, for many years I have ardently desired to beget a son. However, all my efforts have been in vain, because I am without an heir. I can no longer feign happiness. Indeed, my days seem wasted, and are filled with grief. Thus, after much careful consideration and with your kind permission, I have decided to perform a horse sacrifice. Because you are fully knowledgeable in scripture, I am confident that you will be able to lead me on the proper path. The priests unanimously approved of Maharaj Dasharatha's idea to perform the horse sacrifice, and thereafter the king ordered his ministers to make all necessary arrangements without delay.
Okay, we'll go through to page 15. In between there's the story of Rishi Ashringa, who is the priest who had to perform the sacrifice. So we'll go through, of course it would be nice to read it all, but we do have limited time here. So we'll go on to page 15, and we'll continue Okay, actually we'll go to page 16.
Understanding that King Janak would be the future father-in-law of his sons, Maharaj Dasharatha sent him the first invitation. Likewise, other subordinate kings were requested to attend the sacrifice. After one full year, the challenged horse returned to Ayodhya, having wandered over the earth under the protection of 400 princes. Only then could the sacrifice begin. After the preliminary rites had been performed, Maharaj Dasharatha's eldest queen, Kaushalya, circumambulated the challenge horse, which was tied to one of the sacrificial stakes. Then with three strokes of her sword, she severed the horse's head, as prescribed by a scriptural injunction. Thereafter, Rishi Ashringa offered the fat of the dead horse into the sacrificial fire. Maharaj Dasharatha was directed to inhale the fumes to free him from all sins. Then the assisting priest offered the limbs of the horse into the sacrificial fire, bringing the three-day sacrifice to an end. Maharaj Dasharatha then gave away the four directions of the earth in charity to the four chief priests. The Brahmanas returned the gifts, however, saying, "O King, we are devoted to Vedic study and the performance of austerities and have no interest in ruling over a kingdom. Therefore, please give us other gifts like cows and gold." Rishi Ashringa then approached Maharaj Dasharatha, saying, "My dear king, you will surely receive four glorious sons. However, I propose that a separate sacrifice known as Putreshti be performed for that purpose." Maharaj Dasharatha readily assented, and soon the sacrifice was begun. Meanwhile, in the higher planets, the chief demigods approached Lord Brahma and explained, "O grandsire, because of your benedictions, Ravana has become so powerful that he is harassing everyone at will. Even we cannot subdue the wicked Rakshasa. Therefore, we request you to personally devise the means for his destruction." Lord Brahma considered the situation and then replied, "At the time of asking for benedictions, Ravana did not bother to ask for immunity from death at the hands of human beings, for he considered them to be too insignificant." While Brahma was thinking how Ravana could be killed, Lord Vishnu suddenly appeared riding on his carrier, Garuda. As effulgent as many suns, Lord Vishnu appeared in his four-armed form, dressed in bright saffron garments, and carrying his disc, conch, club, and lotus flower. The demigods worshipped the Supreme Lord with great reverence, and then requested, "O Master of the Universe, please come to our rescue by dividing yourself into four, becoming the sons of Maharaj Dasharatha for the purpose of killing Ravana." Lord Vishnu replied, "Rest assured, there is no longer any need to be afraid. I will soon incarnate to rule over the earth for 11,000 years after vanquishing your enemy, the king of the Rakshasas." After seeing this, Lord Vishnu disappeared as the demigods looked on with wonder. Meanwhile, from the sacrificial fire of Maharaj Dasharatha, there appeared an exceptional being of a dark complexion with all auspicious bodily features. This personality appeared to be unlimitedly powerful. He was decorated with transcendental ornaments, and in his hand he carried a large golden pot of sweet rice. That divine person then told.
Especially in North India, many places you'll find whole towns and villages, everyone's participating. In Gujarat on Janmashtami, the front page, they have a big picture of Krishna on the daily papers, and Ram Navami, picture of Lord Ram. So it's a very happy day, Lord Ram's appearance. Lord Ram appeared in the Treta Yuga, right? Now it's the Kali Yuga. Before that was Dwarpa Yuga, and then before that was Treta Yuga. But it wasn't the Treta Yuga just two yugas. It's way back. It's over 18 million years ago. Have all our young men studying in the colleges here. How could it be 18 million years ago? Sounds like Hindu mythology. Because there weren't any human beings at that time, according to modern science. Well, we don't care very much what they say in modern science, because whatever they say, it won't take them 18 million years to change. Practically within 50 years, you can guarantee a young men who are studying now in the college, if you live another 50 years, you see what they're teaching in the college after 50 years, it'll be so many things different to what they teach now. I've several times said, you might have heard in classes, that these scientists, they talk about dark matter and dark energy. And I several times said, it's all bogus. It's just something they made up because they have these theories. And their theories don't make sense, so they invented dark matter. It means matter, you can't see it, touch it, taste it, smell it, or feel it. But it must be there, otherwise how is there so much gravity within the universe? And then they invented dark energy also, out of the factory of their minds. And just yesterday in the newspaper I saw a headline that scientists now say, well, we think actually there's no such thing as dark energy after all. So they're spending childish, Prabhupada called it childish, they're spending millions of dollars to research all things and come up with so many theories. There's some studies going on in which in Cambridge University, which they're showing that actually boys and girls, because there's a theory that actually they're all the same, but it's just by cultural conditioning that boys like to be strong and aggressive, and boys like to play with toys in the Western world, with guns and things like that, and girls like to play with dolls, and they say, well, that's because of cultural conditioning, and they're making a study, big study, to show that actually, no, it's right there, biological factors, it's in the genes. They're spending millions of dollars, but even a five-year-old child can tell you boys are different to girls. They're so stupid. It's unbelievable. But they're intelligent in their stupidity. I mean, they do have some kind of intelligence, first of all, to make up the theory that boys are different to girls, and then they come up with that, and they go on like this back and forward and make so many different theories, and they're all wasting their lives. So Ram appeared 18 million years ago, which it's not very long, it's a few blinks of Brahma. He has a different time scale. And we're still celebrating it now. Many years ago I spoke with, had some discussion with Sadaputa Prabhu, who was a scientist in Srila Prabhupada's service. And I just remember one of the things he said, that you see, you'll find so many people in India who are trained in science, but they still go to the temples. So I ask him, why do you think that is? Because if you hear all these things, just like Ram killed Ravana with 10 heads, Actually, that should be acceptable because of genetic mutations, right? But why are there no more ten-headed people? Maybe because by, what's that called, natural selection, Ram killed. Vitarasi Dikshurane, he distributed in all 10 directions. Here, you take one. Indra, you take one. Eastern direction. And Niriti, you take one. Yama, you take one. He's throwing in the 10. So, 10-headed Ravana, doesn't sound very scientific. So, Sadaputa, his idea or his understanding is that Hindus are able to, when they're doing science, they're doing science. And then they can change their whole mindset and just switch on and switch off. And then they can be devotees of Ram also. It's all possible. In Mayavad, I guess. Then everything's all true. If you want something to be true at one point, it's true at one point, and in another, not. And so on, and so on, and so on. So, it's important to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books and to understand the books and explain the books so that people can get a clear idea, without understanding which first of all, people will become disinclined to worship Rama and Krishna. Because the very term, there's one word the British have introduced. One word, mythology. Just by using that word, they have undermined the whole Vedic culture. And another word, idol. They use. So very, very intelligent demons undermining the culture. So we have to understand and explain. Otherwise, there's so much misunderstanding, just like I'm saying, there's so much worship of Lord Ram, people will be so happy all over North India. But it's all mixed up, not clear understanding. In North India, what they call Ramayana means Ramcharitmanas. The culture surrounding that is mixed with Mayavad. You'll find people, even they're willing to die for establishing a temple of Rama at Rama Janma Bhumi in Ayodhya, but they still don't believe that. If you speak with them, they'll, before they die, they worship Ram as a person, they relish his pastimes, but they think they're ultimately impersonal. It's a very happy day today. There's this verse, Ramante Yogino Nante. It seems to be quite a well-known verse, at least I can say this much. I think 2 or maybe 3 years ago on Ram Navami, I was in Haridwara, where there's a big setup of Gita Bhavan, which is linked with Gita Press. And in North India, it's a very big thing, Gorakhpur, Gita Press. So they invited me to speak there, mostly elderly Marwaris. So in the course of speaking, I quoted this verse, Ramante yogino nante satyananda chitatmani iti rama pade naso param brahma vidhiyate. And I noticed that quite a lot of them were saying it along with me. They knew the verse. So this verse describes Rama as the pleasure, the genuine pleasure of the yogis. The yogis, they don't take pleasure in material life. They accept austerities. They go away from society. They do so to take pleasure in Rama, who is genuine, the reality. Ananta, unlimited, genuine, spiritual bliss, the bliss of the soul. That is known as Rama. That is the ultimate reality. So this is well known. It's also well known that Rama, I was just asking about this Taraka. His name is Taraka Nama. He liberates from, Ram liberates. The name of Rama at the time of, just like, probably not in Tamil Nadu, but in North India, when people are being carried to the burning ghat, then as the body is being carried, Ram Nam Satyahai, they say as they go along. Better if they chanted it during life. But anyway, at the end, Ram Nam Satyahai. The idea you should chant the name of Ram and then people will get liberated. And Varanasi is the place to go for liberation. Lord Shiva predominates over Varanasi, although some people say Lord Vishnu does, but anyway, it's generally thought. So if you die in Varanasi, then you get liberated. How does that work? Lord Shiva comes and in the ear of someone who is dying, he says, Rama, Rama, and the person gets liberated. So people know Rama, Rama Nama, especially, delivers. But they think that the general understanding, if people have any understanding, is that Rama is a principle and becomes embodied as a person, but it's Rama is the principle or the ultimate reality. If you listen to this verse, it doesn't, this Ramante Yogino Nante, it doesn't particularly mention the person who is the son of Maharaj Dasharath. Ramante Yogino Nante, Satyananda Chidatmani, that kind of word, Chidatmani, the impersonalists love that. Satyananda, they love this kind of word. It's not specific. Iti Rama Padena Asau Param Brahma Vidhiyate. So they liked to quote this, but it doesn't specifically say the person Rama. So there's so many misunderstandings. That's why distribution of this edition of Ramayana is very important. Because almost all editions, at least in English, they don't make the point clear that Rama is the supreme personality of Godhead. Even our editions in ISKCON. Actually, I wanted to bring out an edition of Ramayana many years ago because I saw that our devotees, they were reading the edition published by Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan by Kamala Subramaniam, which is well told in good English, but it's absolutely mixed with impersonal concepts. So I wanted to bring out something for, it was specifically for our devotees, actually, in the beginning. At the same time, two other editions came out. One of them has probably become more popular, published in England. But then one of my godbrothers, he made an article which appeared on the internet called A Tale of Two Ramayanas, in which he compared this edition with that edition. And in that edition it says that, well, Ram is a favorite folk hero of India and this and that. And they don't just present it as a folk story. Whereas in this, from the very beginning, I make it clear, Rama is the Supreme Lord. So if you present Lord Rama as a folk hero or some mythical figure, it might be better for your sales, and you might it might even be accepted in some school curriculums because it sounds non-sectarian, and in this way more people will come to know of Rama. But is it useless or worse than useless? It's hiding Ram behind your fear of being known as a devotee. It's something like, those of you from Christian background, you'll know that Peter three times denied Jesus when he was asked, are you with Jesus? No. I think you're with Jesus. No. They don't want to be identified with sectarianism or the Hare Krishna movement or complete surrender and devotion. And what to the Supreme Person? And what about the? What are you going to say? They'll pull you on TV and say, "Okay, you believe Ram appeared 18 million years ago." They don't want to admit. They don't want to say. They're afraid. So what is the use of presenting Rama as... And there are so many additions. It seems that people prefer... Even our devotees, they bring out and they disguise it as some kind of personality development or how... All kinds of things. Why don't they just present Rama is the Supreme Lord who appeared as the son of Maharaj Dasharath, and his brothers were Bharat, Lakshman and Shatrughna, and they just go on, and this is it, and this is the way to understand. Don't bring in our own, oh, we have to change it for the modern world. Immediately becomes contaminated if we put it through our own conceptions and our own egoism. Accept him as he is, the Supreme Lord, as he is. The Lord Rama is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this should be distributed. Otherwise, I see now there's one edition become very popular within ISKCON. Some kind of storytelling. And of course, it is a story, but it's all some modernized ideas. You just present Rama as he is. That's best. There are, of course, Ramayana is a wonderful story. And there are many things to be learned from it. But let's learn what Valmiki teaches us, what Rama teaches us, and not try to dovetail. We've heard this word from Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, most of you, English is not your first language. So dovetail in English is not a very common word. There's this, I think, outside of Prabhupada's vocabulary. There's a dovetail joint in carpentry, woodwork. Otherwise, I don't think that word is used hardly at all. And maybe people who look after pigeons, they may say dovetail. So instead of dovetailing Rama with our own materialistic ideas and modern psychological mumbo-jumbo, such as that boys and girls are all the same, take Rama as he is and learn. There's so many things to be learned from Ramayana about how to live in this world, about transcendence beyond this world. About live in this world means according to Vedic culture. The teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, which of course Krishna gives in absolutely philosophical form, and the same teachings we can observe how Rama, he exemplifies this. Rama is the ideal human. Of course, he's not human, he's the Supreme Lord, but he takes that role. Krishna is known as Lila Purushottama. He's the Supreme Lord appearing to enjoy various pastimes. He's just enjoying. Prem Purushottama. Rama, he's also enjoying, but he's known as Maryada Purushottam. He keeps within limits. He shows the limits that humans should act within. And actually his pastimes, they may not seem to be very enjoyable. There's much distress. Dasharath, he became very pleased when sons were born to him. But that distress turned to great distress. That happiness turned to great distress when he was ordered to banish Rama. It's something like a mother is told, "Now you have to kill your own child." Of course, that's become common nowadays, but in abortion. Generally, if we think, how can a mother kill her child? So Dasharath, he became constrained by dharma to banish his own son, which for him was literally suicide. He couldn't live without Rama. That he'd exiled him, put him to so much distress, and put all the citizens to distress, after telling Rama that he would put him on the throne. But for the sake of dharma, he had to do it. He was in a real quandary, because he'd given his promise to Kaikeyi that I'll fulfill your wish when the time comes. Now, if he had failed to do so, if he said, no, I'm not going to do that because it's not fair to Rama, then that would have set, as a father and a king, he would set a bad example of going against his word. So he was caught like that. So we learn about dharma and how Rama was so rigidly following the principles of dharma. Arya vachasa yadaga daranyam. On the order of his father, he went to the forest. He thought, no, even his father was, later his father told him, no, forget it, forget this Kaikeyi, just, you come back, never mind, forget all that stuff. But Ram said, no, you've given your order and I'm not going to make you break your word. And I accept it, I will go, so I must go. That's all. So we see this adherence to dharma. It's very different, apparently, than that of Krishna. But then, of course, we have to remember that Krishna is playing as the supreme enjoyer. And actually, if we analyze more deeply also, we'll find that when Krishna is accused of breaking dharma, especially prominently, by dancing with others' wives, actually, it's not breaking dharma, because they're all his internal, all the gopis are his internal potency, and there's only a semblance of them appearing as the wives of others. If we speak about dharma from the ultimate platform, Krishna's platform, then everyone who thinks this is my wife, my lawfully wedded wife, my dharma patni, they are all immoral, because actually all the wives belong to Krishna. Everything belongs to Krishna. But Rama sets the example. The human dharma, ordinary dharma, worldly dharma, that must be followed in order to be minimally a human being. What to speak of? Gradually rising to the platform of Krishna consciousness. It's necessary to follow dharma. So important. So Rama exemplifies this. And he also exemplifies the teaching of Bhagavad Gita in so many ways. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna again and again advises Arjuna to be equipoised. Samatvam yoga uchyate. Samatvam, the equipoised. Equilibrium of mind. Sukhe dukhe samak same kritva labha labhao jaya jayo. In happiness and distress, in gain or loss, jaya jayo, in victory or defeat. Practically from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks about this principle. Matra sparshas tu kaunteya, shitoshna sukha dukhata. Why? Agama payano anityas tangs to tikshasva bharata. Knowing that things come and go. It's too hot. Now it's too hot. And the heat will go, then it'll become too cold. So like this, happiness and distress comes and goes, and one should just tolerate, that's all. Tolerate means don't become so much wrapped up in it, that there's so much concern to make our body comfortable that we forget the real purpose of life. There's modern civilization, all kinds of arrangements to make the body comfortable. But then people are wasting their life. So Rama, he shows this. This Ramayana, of course, I'm speaking about, I read from the book, and I'm speaking about distributing it also. But traditionally, Shastras, they weren't so much personally read as explained. That one person will read, and then he'll explain. So we get teachings like this. They're the brahmanas, they study. And then what they've studied, they explain to others. So Ramayana will be explained, and just like we'll hear, Rama, he is the exemplar, the ideal of samatvam. He's not Dukesha nodvignas mana sukesha vigata spriha. In difficulty, one is not disturbed, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. And in happiness, you have so much opportunity to enjoy, but it's not that now I'll enjoy, great, let me. So Rama, when he was said, okay, tomorrow, suddenly, he was told, suddenly now you have to be now you're going to be crowned as the king. And it's not that Rama said, oh, wonderful, now I'll be, enjoy, oh, how great, I'm so happy. And, okay, all right. And all the city became very happy. And next day he's called, and no, you're not going to be the king, you have to go to the forest for 14 years. Okay, go. And okay, same. Happiness and distress. Why? Because he understands. Well, he's showing, of course, he's the Supreme Lord, he understands everything, but he's acting according to his lila shakti, yoga maya, as if a human. So, what we learn, agama, apayana, anityaha, all these things come and go, they're temporary. This is the hand of fate, destiny. According to one's fate, you can be very great one day and just finish the next. Or you can be nothing one day and elevated to a very great position the next. These are the vagaries of fate. We don't know what's going to happen. There's some, all of a sudden, things can change. You may be living very peacefully in your home, and all of a sudden, someone sends a drone and bombs you to pieces. Or there's an earthquake. Or you have a job. You've been in your job for 20 years, and one day you get an envelope. They don't tell you directly. They just give you an envelope and say, your job is finished. Goodbye. Oh, but when I was a kid, they told me I'd study and I'd be a success. And I'd have a good job. Now you're throwing me out. Too bad. Just overnight it all happens. So, understanding that there are powers, great powers beyond us. We can't change the world. What's going to be is going to be. Not that I am doing prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashah ahankara vimurhatma kartahamiti manyate. I'm doing everything. Just see, I'm so powerful, so strong. Quite often you find people who, that's increasingly true in the modern age, people who, they really don't seem to they have even normal intelligence, but they become elevated to some very high position. Someone might say that about the president, current president of the United States. He appears to be a very gross kind of person, but somehow or other he's in that position. And even before him, the previous Republican president. They don't even seem to have even any common sense in many ways about how to conduct themselves, but somehow they're elevated to some very great position. Here in India also, somewhat different case, there's just here in Tamil Nadu at Sri Perumbador, is most famous for not for the birth of Ramanuja, but for the death of Rajiv Gandhi. And then after him, Congress, which wasn't expected to win, they won the election on a sympathy wave, and this Narasimha Rao became the Prime Minister. No one ever expected him to be a Prime Minister. He himself didn't expect it. So he said, well, you know, it's all God's grace on me. So who knows? You never know. Vijay Gopinath, you might be the next Prime Minister. See, the Chief Minister of UP is a sadhu now, so you never know, it might be the next fashion. I don't recommend it. Prabhupada said we can give advice, but we won't take the post ourselves. So, what I'm saying that we get the... we see Bhagavad Gita in action in the personality of Lord Rama. The story is there. The story, it brings devotion into our heart if we hear from devotees. Even if we hear from non-devotees, there's some devotion is there, but it's all like that poison of Mayavad. A little touch of Mayavad, just like a little grain of poison, you know. You can kill a whole city by putting a little poison, powerful poison, into the water supply. So unless there's clear understanding, he is the Supreme, we are his servants. He is not a manifestation of something else. Everything else is a manifestation of him. Unless we understand this, then all our supposed bhakti is all useless. So we have to hear this from devotees, but even hearing from non-devotees, people will get some piety and some understanding of dharma. Dharma, this principle, how to live in this world according to not only the rules of Shastra, but more importantly, the whole ethos of Shastra. What's the word for ethos in Tamil? Bhavana, we could say. I don't exactly know how I'd say it in... How would you say that in Sanskrit? Bhavana, dharana... There's no... Anyway, Sanskrit doesn't work in Tamil anyway. Zeitgeist, I guess you could say, is another word. The whole mood, that's what I'm saying, bhavana. So, Krishna is very liberal. He gives this whole system so that within dharma, varnashram dharma, it's not that everyone will be a Vaishnava. There will be Krishna... He speaks in Bhagavad Gita, Yeshaṁ tvantagataṁ pāpaṁ jana. No, that's the... Yepi anya devata bhakta yajante śradhayānvita taipi māmeva kaunte yajante vidipa. That's not even the verse I'm looking for. Anyway, he's talking about demigod worshippers, avidhipurvakam. They worship not exactly properly. Avidhipurvakam. Well, it is according to vidhi. It's according to Shastric vidhi. But it's not the one that Krishna wants us to follow. But that's there within Vedic culture. That is a lot. The worshippers of Shiva, even impersonalists, all kinds of, they're all within the culture of dharma. And that will help one to not be sinful, grossly, and to perform auspicious activities, such as protecting cows, worshipping the Ganga, worshipping the demigods. These are pious activities. So that culture is there. Lord Rama epitomizes that. He shows that. And the whole of Ayodhya at the time, we can hear about that and then become inspired and have understanding of how to follow that. In many respects, we could say Ravana was also following the Vedic culture. So here we can understand some point. He was a Brahmana by birth. You say, don't be too proud about being a Brahmana by birth, because Ravana was also a Brahmana by birth. And especially his son Indrajit was very powerful in performing sacrifices, but he performed them for getting power, for dominating over the world. So these points should be understood. The Vedic culture should be followed. But what is the point? If one is an enemy of Vishnu, then he's a demon. Even Duryodhana, as he was dying, he said, I'm happy. I've led a good life, he said. He thought he'd led a good life. I performed yajnas, I gave charity to the brahmanas, I died in battle, and you have to stay here and you have to suffer, thinking about how you illegally killed us all. How about that? And happily he died. But he's a demon. Because Vishnu Bhakta Smito Daiva Asuras Tadviparyaya. He's not a devotee of Vishnu. He's just the opposite. What is Ravana's fault? He wants to enjoy this world, not accepting his constitutional position as a servant of the Supreme Lord. So one has this science of devotional service should be learned. Bhagavat Tattva Vigyan, to understand. Without understanding this, there's great benefit, no doubt, in hearing about Lord Rama, but the real benefit will come if one can understand his constitutional position and our constitutional position. But this Ramayana, by hearing, people will, and traditionally have, understood what it is to be dharmic, what it is to be adharmic, what is the ideal behavior of men and women, how Rama, he was the great king to be worshipped by everyone, but he was not arrogant. He loved even the people who are not allowed to live in the cities, like Guha, forest dweller, their descendants of the Nishad, the personification of sin, who came out of the body of Vena. But Lord Rama accepted him because Guha was devotionally inclined. He didn't discriminate that, no, we can't have anything to do with you. And he accepted the monkeys as his devotees. He was open, even a dog who came to him in complaint, he saw to that. So Lord Rama as a king, he was equal to all of his citizens in distributing justice. So in this way, there are so many instances but we can hear, and people can understand what is right and what is wrong, what is good behavior, what is wrong behavior. And naturally by hearing Ramayana, they become attached to Lord Rama, and they also get the inspiration to live properly, to live a life that is honest, pious, not greedy, with self-realization as the ultimate goal, caring for others. We hear so many people nowadays, they talk about this. Oh, you should care for others, empathetic and all. There's no need to discuss all these things. You hear Shastra and live with devotees, and then automatically, it's just there. It's not that you don't have to go for a course. What is that? Before you get married or after you get married, then you have to have some course on how men and women live together and how you have to... in any normal human culture, even among the mlechas, they don't have these. Previously, they didn't have these things. These people just knew how to live like human beings. So now in the present age, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, and it seems more like the symptoms of the end of Kali Yuga are more prominent, people, they're so subhuman. Guha was outside of human cultured society, but he was most pious because he was a great devotee of Lord Rama. Guha, the king in the forest. And then, but nowadays people, they may be very, apparently very cultured, they're just, they have some high position, but they're very gross and shamelessly greedy. This Donald Trump, who's the, I wasn't supposed to say his name, I forgot. He's the president of the United States now. I looked him up in the Veda base, see if there's anything about him. So even years ago, devotees are writing, they used the term egregious, which means really bad, to describe him when he was doing business, because he openly says greed is good. Demoniac. That's why I didn't want to say his name, but I forget. Anyway, we're in India now, so. And I'm not going to America this year, so. Yeah, you don't know these demons. They can just vanish. People just vanish. Did that used to happen in your country? Not so much. Yeah. Before, when it was under dictatorship. Start to say something bad about the government and you just vanish. You're never seen or heard of again. Just demoniac. So in this age, people require, we want to bring this culture back. On Ram Navami, it should be everything stops. The whole country should just, everyone, at least in India, they should celebrate this Ramayana, this Ram Navami. And then why will they celebrate then throughout the year? We can go on hearing and discussing these pastimes. We may think, well, we're devotees of Krishna. No, that doesn't mean you're not devotees of Rama. Lord Chaitanya, he celebrated Rama, and he told his devotees to celebrate it also. He celebrated Vijayadashami. All the devotees, everyone at that time of Lord Chaitanya, they all knew the story of Rama. Of course they did. Everyone knew. Then they'd quote it in discussion. It would be a normal thing to quote Ramayana. We find in Chaitanya Lila also. The gopis, they're living in some remote village. They also know all Ram Lila. That means someone must have told them, right? They must be discussing it. Because they accuse Krishna that, you see, we heard Poonamasi, she used to tell us that you're not just bad in this life, even in previous lives. When you were Vamana, Bali was very good, he offered everything to do, and you treated him so badly, you tied him up and threw him down to hell. What kind of person are you? And then when you were Rama, this Shurpanaka, she approached you romantically and you got her nose cut off. So what can we expect from you? The gopi said. Then another time they told him, you see, you say you're Vishnu and Ram and all this, but your monkeys are just monkeys. All they do is steal the butter. And you're a monkey too because you steal butter. But your monkeys, they can't do anything like building a bridge over the ocean. See? So then Krishna had to build a bridge, at least over Pavan Sarovar, just to show, yeah, my monkeys, yeah, see? They can do something good sometimes also. So the point is that the gopis know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everyone knows. It's just absolutely, everyone should know everything, all these things. So this is the culture that we want to bring. And what comes with that? Acceptance of fate, not being overly attached to life. Because we know that anyway, everyone has to go some point in time. So, just like Ram accepted his fate. All right, I have to go to the forest. All right, okay, whatever. He fought as a duty. My duty as a Kshatriya to fight. And in fighting, there's always the possibility of death. Rama is, of course, he's very confident of winning, but thinking as a human, you never know. You can be killed at any time, but the Kshatriya goes fearlessly into battle. He's not afraid of death. And the wives of the Kshatriyas, they will foster that also. They won't allow their husbands that you not to not fight or to surrender. You go and you win. If you don't win, then we'll join you on the funeral pyre. They have that culture. That culture of the Kshatriyas and then the Brahmanas. They're so, just like we read, the Brahmanas, they're given the whole world. They say, all right, thank you very much. You can take it back. We don't want it. We're interested in the Vedic studies. You give us some cows. See, Brahmanas are like that. They don't... Different mentality. And Vaishyas, very, very busy to produce, but what they produce and then they give it away. They distribute grains to everyone. They may be somewhat rich, they pay their tax, and Shudras, they work nicely, they don't try to imitate Brahmanas. So in this way, the whole culture one can imbibe just by hearing Ramayana, Mahabharata, and of course, most important, Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the education, this idea that people are not educated in Vedic culture, that's true in as much as not. Only the Brahmana boys get a formal school education, but everyone is highly educated, even if they can't read and write. Because they know who is Rama, who is Krishna. I'm in this position that I'm in now because of my previous activities. I have to act in such a way that I may be free, become free from birth and death. So it's not that people are uneducated, but it's just that they're not educated in all this, all the things which are of no use to them. All of you must have, of course, many of you are still young, but you must have studied sines and cosines and all this kind of thing in school. Right? You must have done also. So I did also, but I know the word, but I can't tell you what a sine or a cosine is now. It's something, the angle or something divided by the radius. I don't know. I can't remember even what it is at all. It's completely useless for me. If someone wants to build a bridge, they should know what a sine or a cosine. But even that you don't need to know. You just put the enter everything in the computer nowadays. It does it all for you. Someone should know what it is. But it's not necessary for everyone to understand this. But it is necessary for everyone to understand who is Lord Rama. Who am I? Why am I in this world? How should we live? How should a Brahmana live? How should a Kshatriya live? How should a Vaishya live? How should a Shudra live? How should a woman live? What is our role? What we're supposed to play? We can learn all of this. How Ram, even though having all opportunity for enjoyment, is willing just to let it go. And so much concerned about the welfare of others. When Bharat met Rama in Chitrakoot, then Rama, all the citizens of Ayodhya, they wanted to come to see for the welfare of Rama, but he was asking about Bharat. Are you looking after the citizens properly? Are you making sure that the women and the children and the cows, they're properly protected, that there's proper law and order? He was concerned with the citizens. Before Bharat could ask him so many things, he was asking about them. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada, we see, he was manifesting the pastime of sickness in the latter part of 1977. He didn't eat for days and days, but he'd regularly ask, what prasadam are devotees taking? So this concern for others, not living for one's own self-centered sense gratification, but living for the for others, just like the trees in Bhagavatam. Krishna gives these. Krishna himself in the forest tells about the trees, how they live for the benefit of others. Etavaj janma safalyam dehinamiha deishu pranaya artha dhyavacha shreya acharyam sada. And he says that everyone should be like this. Everyone should be like the trees. They should give themselves completely. Their life, their wealth, their intelligence, their words, everyone should act for the welfare of others. So Ram is the, we see how Ram lived for the welfare of others. The Vaishnava Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, lived for the welfare of others. Then we ourselves imbibe this, not just for me, for me, for me, but how can we live for the welfare of others? Do everything for Krishna's pleasure. And yasmin tushte jagat tushta. Try to satisfy Krishna and everyone will be satisfied. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. Unless anyone has any question. Ah, yeah. You always have questions, huh? Yeah? Okay, give him the mic then. Don't ask me something about all the wild things going on in Russia. We know it's crazy over there. There's no easy solution. Shabari ate the fruit and then gave it to Lord Rama.
Yes.
She tasted it first before she gave it to him. In the beginning of this book, I put one note. This edition of Ramayana is based on the original text by Valmiki. The well-known descriptions of Lakshmana Rekha, of the ascetic woman Shabari tasting fruit before offering it to Lord Rama, and of Lord Rama worshipping Lord Shiva, are not included because they do not appear in the Valmiki Ramayana. At least what we have nowadays. It may be in other Shastras, or it may be in other editions of Ramayana, by poets in vernacular languages of India, but it's not in Valmiki Ramayana. But anyway, it's... That's bhakti bhav. You want to see if the fruit is... If you get a group of fruits, just like now it's mango season, it's just coming in full. So if you take 10 mangoes, maybe 2 or 3 will be superb, 2 or 3 will be so-so, and 2 or 3 will be not so nice at all. So you might in... pure devotional consciousness, you might want to taste a little and then give, because you don't want to give the sour one. That's not to be done. That's not to be done in deity worship. But it may be done out of pure devotion. Shabari, just by her very name, means she's not very cultured by background. Forest dweller. So they may not know all these things, but out of pure love, she's doing that. So that is glorified as a great quality, because it's unorthodox, but it's done out of great love. It becomes more striking that it's unorthodox, not the proper thing to do normally. How was I attracted to Hinduism? I never was, and I'm still not. In some respects. Hinduism? Yeah. Actually, the first contact I had with Hindus, I thought it was something really weird and horrible. I was afraid, actually. Come to think of it. Anyway, I won't tell you now. I got one of Srila Prabhupada's books in Ireland, which is a small country at the edge of Europe. I read it, thought it sounded very good. So I came to the nearest temple of the Hare Krishna movement and I joined the Hare Krishna. Yeah, that's true. By Prabhupada's grace. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Sri Ramachandra Bhagavan Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.